Please be seated.
Court is ready to hear argument in 050613 in Ray Thayer County Criminal District Attorney's Office. Justice Green is not sitting in this call.
May it please the court, Mr. Brown makes an argument for the relators. Relators have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. The fourth court wrote an opinion regarding district attorneys and their testimony in malicious prosecution cases, which opens up the district attorneys of Texas to testifying every time a malicious prosecution case is filed. The fourth court ignored the fact.
Well, but we did that, didn't we? I mean, we did say in King that we have language about opinion evidence from D.A. Sutton, for
yes.
example.
In the King case, D.A. Sutton did testify. Nobody knows why D.A. Sutton testified, whether he objected or not, whether he objected and was ordered to testify. This court did not find in King that D.A. Sutton's testimony was necessary. And in fact, if you read the fourth court's opinion regarding the King case and the but-for element that they looked at regarding procurement, they say that in order to prove the but-for element, you have to have the person with the discretion to prosecute, testify, but for false information, the testimony would not have occurred. If you take the King case and the fourth court case and extend it to the language that the fourth court uses and that other courts have used, the real problem here, not only opening DAs to testifying when they have the discretion to prosecute, is then you also have to then tell civil courts that they must now allow plaintiff's attorneys in underlying cases and defense attorneys in malicious prosecution cases to call grand jurors that decided whether to prosecute. Because the case law says when it's the discretion of the district attorneys or the grand jury. And in the King case, you don't have the grand jurors testifying. You have Sutton merely providing additional evidence.
Well, can the DA reject or refuse the recommendation by the grand jury? And isn't ultimately the DA's authority
ultimately
decision?
Ultimately, the DA can dismiss the case.
Hold on.
Isn't
it their ultimate decision to either go forward with the prosecution or decline to do so? Right?
Correct. But the standard set forth by this court is that you have to call the person with the discretion to prosecute. And the language specifically says, be it the prosecutor or the grand jury. It doesn't say
but
only
ultimately
the
ultimately always is the prosecutor.
Correct, but when it states that the grand jury, and the King case says, in the King case it says the decision to prosecute was the grand jury's. That's from the King case, the language of this court. And when the person with the discretion, as the King case states, the discretion to prosecute was the grand jury's, you then have to, if you take King and the fourth court's opinion to its extension, you have to allow grand jurors to be called to be asked the question, but for the false information, would you have indicted this case?
How would you propose proving that element without intruding on thought processes or work product?
I believe the way you do it is the way they did it in the Thrift case, which is the same kind of case, and I believe that the King case was going this way. What happened in the King case, which surprisingly was a fourth court opinion, the jury was presented with, in that case it was 5 pieces of false information. And the fourth court said, they never had the but-for question. The other side will tell you, well, that's a great case. 3 DAs testified in that case. This was the Bexar County case. The 3 DAs that testified, not one of them ever testified to the but-for question. All they testified about was their investigation, how they got the case, was there some false information. They never get to the key question that the fourth court says you must have this testimony for, which is the but-for question.
But again, how do you prove that?
In Thrift, what they did was they presented the 5 pieces of false evidence that was presented to the DA and I think to the law enforcement. And the jury was allowed to draw the conclusion that but for all that false information, this prosecution would not have gone forward. And I think that's how you have to do it in order to not violate work product of district attorneys and in order to not violate the grand jury secrecy and have this court tell civil courts we're now going to start breaking grand jury seals and we're going to start calling grand jurors to the stand.
So do you have an expert testify as to elements that a prosecutor considers in determining whether to prosecute?
I think you could call. In the Thrift case, it was simply a matter of they just presented so much false information. They said, well, the jury just made the decision. That, you know, they said no no prosecutor could have this much false information.
But I guess what I'm asking is, I mean, is this an area that the layperson would know about what is likely to influence a prosecutor in that decision, or do you need experts to say, here's what a reasonable prosecutor would look at and then let the jury decide?
I think all you would need is to present to the jury what the elements of the criminal case are. And the jury could say, all right, here's what was presented. If you have five elements to the criminal case, well, the five things that they base this on were all false. None of these were true. That case could have never been indicted. And I think you have to do that. I know it's a high standard, but I think from the public policy standpoint, you have to protect the prosecutors and the criminal justice system
and
the grand jurors.
Wouldn't having an expert say?
You could have an expert certainly come in and say, I guess you'd hire ex-prosecutors perhaps, or defense attorney, criminal defense attorneys, and say, here's the criminal case that needed to be initially prima facie shown, and you'd explain to a jury that here's what had to be shown, and here's what, just basically to get the prosecutor's door, here's what would have had to be brought forward. Then you pile up all the false information, and that's how the jury makes a decision, as they did in Thrift, where the fourth court said there was enough falsity here that this, but
that's
for
just,
that, this
that's
case
just adding guesswork. I mean, we're really asking, why did the DA file with case, right? Why did DA go forward?
Why did they go forward?
That's, you know, we can all hire experts to speculate, but I'm not sure.
I think what you're asking the jury to say, look at, is the malicious prosecution parties are going to have to say there was so much false information, there's no way this case could have gone forward.
And that's they go forward like in the Tuya case, in the drug charge case up there North Texas, and mm-hmm. where the DA, as I understand, resigned and perhaps may be disbarred. I mean, DAs are not above the law. Certainly they're prone to make mistakes, as in that situation. So why can't a plaintiff's lawyer, as you say, get into the mindset of the DA when they're going forward with information that perhaps is false?
Well, I believe in malicious prosecution case, you're then getting into the core work product of the DAs. And that's never been broken. That's, no court has ever said you can break that. You just simply can't. If you're getting into the, if you're looking into criminal activity of a district attorney.
Where you produced a big file.
Yes.
And is it clear to you that either party has a right to that file? No work product problem there.
In this case, you're talking about a waiver issue?
In general.
In general, I don't think any party has the right to a DA's file. I think the DA's office, as we did in this case, can elect to assist private litigants, as we do all the time.
To what percent of DA's offices have open files, criminal cases?
Percent of the DA's offices?
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
I mean,
generally, will they produce them?
Yeah.
I just know that Bexar County, we generally, if there's nothing in there that we have a reason, if it's a closed case, nothing that's going to reoccur, nothing. It's not a big case where we think it's going to come back. A minor case like this, private litigants come forward and they say we'd like to, you know, if we get a copy of the file, we'll produce it. In this, we usually exclude work product. In this one, I guess this is my penance. I'm the one that produced the file, and I went through it and saw nothing in there really that mattered to the DA's office, so I produced the whole thing, and now I'm here.
And therefore you should win.
No good deed go unpunished.
Right. So I think the fourth court opinion goes way too far in opening the DA's offices up, because I don't think the but-for test requires that you call DAs to the stand. And it not only goes too far in that you're not just asking for work product from the DAs, you're asking for core work product under the but-for test. You're asking pure legal theory and opinion. You're not acting a fact question. You're saying, is it your opinion that you would have not prosecuted this case? Or you're going to ask grand jurors. You're going to have to call at least nine of them and say.
Help me understand what the effect, while we're certainly concerned about the DA's office, we're also concerned about what the common law claim is of malicious prosecution, which is more our bailiwick. What happens if the rule is no DAs cooperating in these cases at all? No files, no testimony, no nothing. Does that make it easier or harder to recover on a malicious prosecution claim?
I guess it all depends what's in
defendants
the file.
Defendants will all say, well, you know, plaintiff will have to have something bad, some lie that was told, some misrepresentation. And the defendants will all say, yeah, but we don't know why the DA may have been you know, may have been something else the DA learned. DAs in Texas have discretion whether they file these cases or not. So you're not going to hear from the DA or anything about the DA, but we're just telling you it's their discretion. And
right.
We end up deciding these cases on whether the jury likes the plaintiff or the defendant. Because we're not going to get any evidence as to whether the DA, in fact, made an independent call or not.
Right, and one of the elements isn't why it was dismissed. The element is it was dismissed. Where you're going to get your evidence from is your malice element and the probable cause element. And the malice element, another issue that the fourth court didn't address, the malice comes up before it happened, before the lawsuit, before the prosecution occurred. So then your jury would hear that these were two people that hated each other, and this one filed the lawsuit. And that's where you get the decision on whether it was malicious. Not the reason the DA dismissed it is irrelevant. I mean, it can be a witness problem. It can be the DA decided later the case was no good. But the jury never.
But the reason the DA filed the case is not irrelevant. It's because it's been procured if it was based solely on a lie.
Well, one of the parties procures it. Right. If the DA, if it's procured on a lie, that goes to one small element. The other problem, the fourth court.
I mean, usually in the past cases, usually the case of the DA, if called to testify, says, of course, somebody comes in with a complaint, that's not why I file it. I do my own investigation. That's why I file it. And that's,
well, that's why I chose to
that
prosecute.
That means the defendant gets off.
No. The person that brought it in still procures it. If they brought it in to the DA's, well, if the DA says, yes, but for the false information, I still would have prosecuted this case, then the person does get off. Then there's no liability. The problem is the DA can say that. Our position is the DA needs to volunteer to say that, not be compelled to say that or come into court and talk about why they dismissed or did not dismiss a case and open up a DA's office for private litigants and defendants in future cases, perhaps criminal cases, to finding out how the DA's office works. If you get enough of these going, you're eventually going to find out the working of a DA's office, why cases are dismissed. May find ways that defendants in criminal cases open the DA's office open, find out why cases are dismissed, and work that to their advantage, or attorneys do in the future. And so
we did say in King, DA Sutton did testify, and we did sort of say he should have offered an opinion.
Yes, that was, I'll just say, a surprising part of King. I think what the court is saying is D.A. Sutton could have been asked his opinion, and D.A. Sutton is certainly free to offer his opinion. It's his. He can not hold
his
privilege.
Well, we didn't say he was certainly free to. We dismissed it because we said he offered no evidence whatever as by opinion from D.A. Sutton, for example. So it seems to indicate that we approved that going in that direction.
I think that was, as you say, going in that direction. I think if it was looked at more closely other than simply between two hyphens, perhaps it would be rewritten a little differently than to say that D.A. Sutton's opinion could be offered, his core work product, which is what that would be, that he needs to answer that question. Because then you're now ordering an attorney, basically, in Texas, to go into court, and for the first time ever, you're ordering the core work product be violated, simply because of the fact that two civil litigants seeking monetary damages need him to say whether or not he would have dismissed a case.
Normally, if a file is produced that discloses work product, like this one, then testimony regarding that disclosure can be compelled. You're arguing for a different result here.
Right. I don't believe
because your file contained notes about conversations and opinions and thought processes. Normally, in any other civil litigation, that can be gone into, and the person who's was involved in those communications or persons can be compelled to testify about those notes if they've been voluntarily produced because the rationale is privileges have been waived. Why should we treat this differently other than, well, it's not an insignificant issue, the workings of a DA's office, but you're asking for something different than what happens most of the time.
Well, I don't believe it's different. I believe what the cases have said is if you waive your work product to certain documents, you may waive it to other documents. I don't believe the cases say if you waive it to documents, you then have to take the stand and testify. Perhaps private parties or non-attorneys would.
You said testify. If you add testify about the documents you waive the privilege as to, then I would certainly disagree with you. If you produce a letter that says I talked with X about Y, and do that voluntarily, and then you get on the stand and the lawyer says, well, tell me about this letter and your conversation about X and Y, then you can be compelled to testify about that normally.
I agree that a non-attorney could be compelled to testify.
Maybe beyond that, there's an issue in the discussion, the debate. Maybe you win. But about the specific notes that were turned over, normally you can be compelled to testify.
And I think if it wasn't attorney's notes and it wasn't an attorney's file, that would be true. If it was, say, one of the plaintiff or the defendant in the case, something they had in their possession had turned over, they could be asked about those. But I don't believe their attorney would be put on the stand if, say, their attorney had sent out and you had received something in the file, a discussion between the attorney and his client. I don't believe any court would say, now the attorney has to take the stand and be asked about what happened in that conversation. Perhaps the plaintiff would, because they've waived their attorney-client privilege in that case, I believe. I don't believe the attorney could be compelled to discuss that.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is now ready to hear arguments from the real party in interest.
May it please the court, Mr. Wilson and Mr. Gale, is an argument for the real party in interest. Mr. Wilson will open with the first 13 minutes.
Chief Justice, fellow justices, Supreme Court, opposing counsel, may it please the court. I think that the court has picked up on an issue, of course, with this particular case. And I think it's a very important case for the Supreme Court to make another decision about a malicious prosecution, because the court has decided in the past, we identified King and also by Lip, that the procurement initiation issue has been an issue in the past for the court.
What do you want to ask the DA?
What do I want to ask the DA? Well, as I briefed and as I cited to within my brief, the DA was very involved in this case. There is several telephone messages from the...
Oh, there's no question about that. You've got all that. What do you want to ask?
My questions I want to ask the DA regarding to the procurement issue alone, would be, based upon King, did you rely on the information for the complaint filed by the defendant or the complainant in this case to...
Why do you have a substantial need for that? You've got the affidavit from Travis. They filed the case. They had lots of investigations, but that was the only affidavit. Why do you need to ask that?
Based upon the King case, the King case said you need the evidence from the DA in that case to show that he relied on that information to bring forth the prosecution. That's what the King case said.
What evidence is there that they didn't?
What evidence is there that
you've
not
got? You offer the affidavit, which is the basis for the indictment, and you say, that's my prima facie case. There's nothing in here that's affidavits from somebody else. So why do you need to bolster it with asking him that question?
There's no other evidence before the court that correct. This case isn't on the trial yet. And if there's evidence that comes forth during the trial or from the DA himself when he's testifying, I think it may be necessary, of course, to ask the question regarding the defendant. Because you also have the issue regarding them not testifying, and I would think that the procurement is either false information or failed to disclose information. And if DA would have known at the time they filed this complaint, are you going to testify? No, I'm not going to testify. You think the DA is going to bring forth this complaint when the complaint is not going to be able to testify, which I think also goes to the malice.
I can't see the need for that. You've got a bunch of phone records from the DA saying this lady says her son ain't showing up, and I saying I'm dismissing the case because she failed to appear, and her chewing me out for 20 minutes. The next day saying, how dare you dismiss the case? And saying, again, I did it because she said she wasn't, in no uncertain terms, she wasn't going to appear. So there's, what possible need do you have for more than that?
Well, I'm going to need the DA to come and testify during that conversation. I mean, getting the document and evidence itself is going to be an issue. And that telephone conversation the DA had with the complainant is a very important issue in my case, because I'm going to have a he said, she said type of argument. Yet I have the complaint in the case calling the DA.
So the answer to my question is you need this because you think it, not because you're afraid of getting a directed verdict, but because it'll bolster your case.
No, I'm not talking about bolstering. I'm talking about the elements of my case. One of those elements which the DA talked about is malice, which you talked about when you initially procure or initiate, you look at malice at the time.
No, but I mean, you want to call this person live. Deposition, trial. Attorneys do that for one reason or one of two reasons. Either if it's opposing witness, they want to harass them until they admit, oh, you're right, I lied when I wrote that. or if it's a helpful witness, they won't put on the stand and say, when you said you dismissed it because they said they weren't showing up, did you really mean that? Yes, I really meant that. Is that what you said? Yes. And did you, you know, which is just bolstering. Now, it's not, I need to know what's not in the file that makes this so important. We need to mandamus the district attorneys and force them to show up.
You're mentioning bolstering. That is not a bolstering issue. I mean, that goes to the maliciousness of the complainant and also goes to the credibility of the complainant. It's not a bolstering because that complainant and that witness that you're talking about in that conversation called back and said, no, I didn't want the case dismissed. I wanted to continue with the case. In fact, I want to refile this case and go against my client again, which is going to the maliciousness of the complainant and the witness himself. And I need the DA to come in and testify regarding that conversation.
Because the jurors won't believe the DA's notes saying exactly that.
Well, how am I going to get the DA's notes into evidence? It's going to be an issue. Because it's a handwritten conversation with the complainant. That conversation.
Well, you've got it by depo on written questions that prove it up, don't you? It's an office record. What's the problem?
Well, if you're my trial judge and you're telling me that you're going to let him, that'd be great.
But I am relying. We'll worry about that after the trial, whether it's the admissibility calls made correct, but it's done by depo on written questions. It's an office, you know, records made in an ordinary course of the DA's office.
Correct. But it still is hearsay within hearsay. I mean, I can get through the first level with the business record exception.
Not a problem with the plaintiff sitting there. It's admission by party opponent takes care of the inside that. Within the hearsay.
If I'm able to get an evidence. But if the DA is there to testify regarding this conversation, it's not going to be an issue.
So you just need it to make it a live witness instead of the paper?
No. I need it there to prove the maliciousness of the complainant and also the credibility of the complainant. If the document does not get the evidence, that's the problem that I'm going to have with this case. Is that I'm not going to have the DA there live because the judge has quashed my subpoena. If she doesn't allow the evidence to be seen by the jury, that's going to substantially hurt my case. And also, it's very important, I believe, not only regarding this telephone conversation that the DA is having with the complainant, it's also the involvement of the complainant with the DA's office as well. The work product that they waived and that's in the file shows that the DA went to the judge in this case, is asking for an increase in the bond, also asking for a temporary restraining order against my client, wherein she's not even going to come testify in court. She's wanting to put more of this onto my client and the burden of a TRO, higher bond, and she's discussing this with the DA's office.
Well, I mean, flipping through the file, it looks like both of your clients were abusing the police. Y'all were calling the police on each other for throwing paper across the fence, and grass clippings, and there's sprinklers coming over on my side. Now, that's on both sides. And my question is, haven't you all harassed the DA's office enough? Why should we help you do it some more?
Well, for that reason, my client was the one who was arrested in jail, had to post bond, had to go to court 3 or 4 times. And
your client called the police a dozen times. Complaining and dragged the police out there and saying, go do the same thing to them, didn't he?
My client called the police because that's what he's told to do by the police. So if you have a problem, call the police because that's what she was doing as well. But the complaint in this case, she was never arrested and took out of jail. She never had to come to court 3 or 4 times. In fact, she never had to come to court at all. The day of trial, the day this case is going to trial, she says, I'm not going to come testify. After my clients had to go post bond, be in jail, go to court 3 or 4 times, retain an attorney based upon this complaint that she filed with the DA's office, which they supposedly relied on to go forward with, and plus not only did the DA rely on that, the DA was helping her with her case. Now, you're talking about me harassing the DA's office. How about the DA harassing my client where they're going to the judge asking for a TRO and asking for an increase in the bond just based upon this one piece of information or this complaint that was filed by the complainant?
Is the but-for evidence from the district attorney, is that core work product, do you think, or not?
Your Honor, no. I mean, when you say...
Why would you say not?
Substantial need or undue hardship in proving the case, because based upon the King decision, you already decided...
But the question is it core work product, which is the thought processes, and let's see, it's defined in our rules... mental impressions, opinions, conclusions, legal theories. Isn't that core work product?
Yes. I mean, giving the opinion of the attorney could be possibly core work product, yes.
But and do you know of any basis for disclosing core work product?
Well, based on the King decision, where this Supreme Court said that with procurement issue, and you reversed that case based upon no evidence from the DA's office showing that they relied on this false information. So you need the DA to come in and testify, yes, I relied on false on that information, which was false. If I would have known it was false, I would have done forward the case.
And apart from King, just in general, are you aware of any basis for ever discovering core work product?
Yes, it's waived.
And I understand that's your argument here. But otherwise, but apart from being waived or what you think the King court case is, generally core work product is off the table no matter what.
Correct, yes.
Why would a file containing this is what this side says and this is what that side says waive as to core work product question whether and why I'm going to prosecute or dismiss this claim?
Well, if you go into make the argument of undue hardship and necessity, that's one road you could travel to get.
Well, that's to get work product, but that's not to get work core work product.
Correct, yes.
So you're waiving as to that, and of course there's a kind of a sliding scale here. Can you get the substantial equivalent by other means? Which is why my questions are, isn't this the substantial equivalent of everything except the core work product?
In this particular case, I mean, based on my reading of the King case, you need, for that but-for analysis, you need the DA to come in and testify to show that.
Well, it says DA testimony, for example, it's not the exclusive and one and only means to gather the info. There are interview notes and reports, which you already have.
Yes, I know. If they will become evidence, yes. I mean, I have the investigator in the case, which has a memo in the file as well, which says the 14-year-old, his statement is suspicious, meaning that, you know, false or not credible. Will that memo actually get into evidence? I don't know. I mean, that's up to the trial judge to make that decision.
I understand your problems with trying to get documents submitted in those type of cases, and I understand that perhaps there could be parts of the state where you may have a prominent family in cahoots with a DA who goes after another family for whatever reason. But what more, as Justice Brister, what more do you need in your case to go forward? And if we decide in your favor in this case, what does that do to the DAs across the state? As it was said by your opponent here, that does that subject them to cross-examination on every one of these files? Do they have to then become open their files to everybody? I mean, that certainly can't be a good rule.
Well, no, I don't. But I think in this particular case, let's say he didn't produce his file, didn't give it to me, I would still be for an appellate court or this court arguing that, one, I should be entitled to it because of the involvement with the complaint with the DA's office. In a malicious prosecution case, that's where the information is flowing, is the DA's office. And most definitely, based upon the file that I got, they were talking directly to the district attorney's office.
Is the question that you're asking whether the DA went forward with the prosecution based on false information given to it by the malicious prosecution defendant? Is that the issue?
That's one of the issues, Your Honor.
What else do you have to ask about?
The other issue goes to the maliciousness and the credibility issue of the complainant.
Well, but that's not the DA has little to say about that, really. So I guess my question is more a practical one. Most district attorney's offices who believe that they prosecuted based on a lie given by the defendant in the malicious prosecution case, most of them are not going to be reluctant to say that because it impinges on their credibility and the DA's electability. You know, what sort of information are we using to prosecute? Can't that sort of information be gotten, received on a less formal basis than requiring the DA to testify? I mean, a more cooperative effort in instead of compelling testimony from DAs who are trying to enforce our criminal laws?
Yes, I mean, they'd be taking their deposition, for example. I'd be taking their deposition prior to trial.
Or a phone call, you know, and can you just tell me, is this the basis or not? Or do you think they're always going to be hostile? And my presumption is they will be less hostile to answering that sort of question if they, in fact, themselves believe that the prosecution was based on a lie by someone who came forward.
Your Honor, I'd like to say yes, they would be cooperative with me, but I can tell you that I represented my client in a criminal case, and the DA was less than cooperative on that case, and based upon also on the information I received after the fact when I got into the civil litigation. So possibly, if the DA is cooperative, you could use that route. But the route I would, based upon the King decision.
Well, what we're confronting here, and we understand the King decision, but a decision that says you're entitled to bring them in court to testify is not going to apply just in this case between these two individuals involved, but it's going to be statewide. And so Harris County is trying to prosecute capital murder cases and felonies, et cetera, and some portion of their time is going to be spent in a civil courtroom explaining away their decision. And whether that's good policy or not is something that was not the issue in King, and maybe now it's time for us to look at that.
Well, in that type of case, like in a case that's based upon a complaint, DWI, or a complaint that's based upon just a police officer, no, you're not going to run into that issue. And with a capital murder case, I guess it would depend on who the complaint actually is and what the evidence will show.
I'm just talking about the resources that the DA office has to apply to other cases not related to the malicious prosecution case, but pulling attorneys out, pulling prosecutors out, and having them sit through a deposition, full-day deposition, or a three-day trial, or what have you. There are implications that
yes,
we
Your
have to consider.
Yeah, there are implications, but, Your Honor, I also want to impress upon this court that my only issue that I briefed before the court was not only the procurement, we have the malice element, which I think is very important to my case, and also a credibility issue as well, and then the waiver issue.
Your co-counsel is going to address the court.
I think the key issue here is what the DA's office is requesting. What they're requesting is immunity from testimony. I want to address quickly.
But they don't. Is it core work product?
It is not.
Okay.
I mean, the question is directed
to
Mr. Wilson.
To say it was.
Well, he said in positions, some impressions of attorneys are core work product. The question is, when did you develop those impressions? Were they developed in anticipation of the litigation, whether it's a civil suit or in a criminal context?
It doesn't matter. It was in the course of that criminal.
Well, the question is much like an attorney that handles a will contest for somebody. When he testifies in a later suit regarding his impressions at that time, he is looking backwards now. He is not talking about something that he was considering or developing during the case itself, but he's now looking back to answer a question for the courts. You know, it is not a burden upon any attorney or any governmental entity to come forward and give testimony that's truthful. Although it may be a burden sometimes that attorneys have to do that, the district attorney's office does not have some sort of absolute immunity, perhaps from a 1983 suit for some civil rights violation, but not from immunity from testimony. And that is what they're requesting.
Every other lawyer has an absolute immunity from saying, why did you file that case or dismiss that case? Why did you tell your client why you dismissed that case?
I mean, I understand the fourth court opinion in this case really hinged on the procurement initiation issue, and that seems to be the import of the King decision, which almost makes it incumbent upon any attorney who wishes to bring a malicious prosecution case to actually come forward with that evidence. And I would say that if you don't do so, you should be contacting a malpractice carrier.
Well, in this case, the file that was produced under the label work product says, I clearly informed her that if this is, I believe, the DA or someone at the DA's office, an assistant DA speaking, writing here, I clearly informed her that if he did not testify, the case would be dismissed. And later on seems to say that I would dismiss it because her son would not testify. And the notes here tell why the case was going to be dismissed in the opinion of the author here. And I don't know exactly who it was, but it sounds like it's one of the assistant DAs right in the middle of the case. So to the extent that's core work product, it was disclosed voluntarily.
Well, I certainly don't think that's poor work product because it doesn't have anything to do with the case itself. It deals with the dismissal of the case. And I think the
that's,
court.
You believe that's work product but not core work product?
I would agree with that. The problem with the fourth court opinion is it really doesn't go into the mouse issue because what you have here is a situation where these persons bring a criminal charge. They, by their own actions, have no intention of pursuing it to the end, which shows the malice intent. The force court opinion mainly goes in the procurement and initiation issue, and I think they kind of overlook the importance of the testimony, which goes towards the malice. Yes, malice is shown at the time that you procure or you initiate it, but it can be shown by direct evidence as well as indirect evidence or circumstantial evidence. So you're never going to have that Perry Mason moment where someone admits that I did this because of some ill will or maliciousness. But what you have in this case is a showing by circumstantial evidence that although they brought the charge, they had no intent on pursuing it to the end. I see that my time has expired. If I could ask for a few moments.
Are there any further questions?
One other question. To your knowledge, were all the facts upon which this prosecution was initially brought false?
We believe so, Your Honor.
Then why doesn't that squarely fit within King's statement that an inference might be drawn in a case in which the only information the official relied on in deciding to prosecute was false, the inference being that the prosecution was procured and causation existed? Why doesn't the fact that all the information being false fit squarely within King and make it unnecessary to have any other information?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to make sure that the information is going to be part of the evidence in the case. And I think you really have a hearsay problem in regards to this. I would expect any judge not to just allow carte blanche the report that was disseminated by the DA's office. I would expect that. And you do have a hearsay problem. And if it doesn't come in, it's sort of like someone coming in and saying, I would like to give you this affidavit. I will not testify at deposition, and I'm not going to testify at trial, but you can use that affidavit for whatever purposes you want. We all know the affidavit's not coming into evidence, and therefore it's basically no use.
You're kind of mingling information the prosecution was based on with admissibility of trial. Those may be two different things.
Well, I think the problem is that they've already, freely admitted that they secure and they choose to decide who they're going to assist in cases, and they provide all the documents in that regard. When they provide those documents, and really my main point standing up here was regarding the waiver issue, but they have waived the privileges they might have otherwise had, and that's what the fourth court had in this case.
So what if they don't provide any documents to you? I mean, where do you go from there?
If he cooperated with you
and then helps you present your case, but you know, you want us to require his office to testify.
Although I think they've waived whatever privileges apply to it, and they waived any ability to argue about the waiver issue because they failed to brief it entirely in this case, and the only reason we responded to it was just because it was part of the fourth court's briefing. I mean, apart from that, is that it still is a court work product. We would still be here arguing if they didn't supply the documents. They have not taken the position that they weren't going to give us the documents. But if they had taken that position, we would be here arguing that there is not immunity from the production of those documents in regards to this case. And it would be the same as if we're arguing in regards to the testimony as well.
Is it your position that none of the information produced in the file was core work product?
You know, I have not scoured the record to determine something I would consider core work product. And I would think that I didn't see anything in there, sort of a daily log or a journal regarding the DA's intent on his witnesses or what he thought of the witnesses, anything of that nature. Most of the concerns in there were collateral and not really in anticipation of litigation. There were things concerning more of a procedural nature regarding the dismissal, things of that nature. So I think, and to the extent that the investigators had also discussed with different witnesses and had spoken to them and had concerns with the testimony, I really don't think those things are considered core work product. I think they're sort of the other work product. Which there is a need in this case, and they're certainly not the avenue for them to sort of ask this court for an absolute protection as far as documents or testimony. Yes, it's daunting sometimes that people have to come forward and give testimony regarding some incident that they've had an involvement with or people that they've represented in the past, but there is no protection for the DA's office in regards to that, much like there's no protection for myself or anyone else, including the President of the United States.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown, I'm not sure I understand your position on the waiver argument. Are these your notes in the file that was produced?
No, they're not.
This, at the top, it looks like it says notes regarding a file number prepared by Robert McCabe, ADA.
He was one of the district attorneys working on the case.
In his handwritten notes, that's what it looks like. He says, I clearly informed her if he did not testify, the case would be dismissed. A couple of lines later says, then to dismiss it because her son would not testify. That's the opinion or determination at least one assistant DA of what would happen to the case if the son did not testify, correct?
Correct.
And that ultimately was the decision of the DA's office, correct?
To dismiss the case, correct.
And this says because the son would not testify, at least in McCabe's opinion. Has the DA's office disclosed anything that told why the case was dismissed? Or do we only have this one assistant DA's opinion?
Just the docket sheet, which would, I think it says dismissed, lack of witnesses.
Okay. Now, in your opinion, given this disclosure, production of this document, could Mr. McCabe be compelled to answer why was the case dismissed, that question at trial, in your opinion?
No, that's core work product. That cannot be waived, I do not believe.
Okay. What could he be, in your opinion, asked, did you believe the case should be dismissed because the son would not testify?
I don't believe he could be asked that question. I believe he could be asked, did you write that down, and he could say, that's my document. I don't believe he could be compelled to discuss his legal theories or opinions.
Okay. And if he wrote, I believe under the law the case should be dismissed because the primary witness was not going to be there to testify. He can be asked at trial, did he write that? But he can't be asked at trial if that was his opinion at the time.
If he's allowed to be called into court and put on the stand, I believe he could be asked if that's his document, he wrote it. I don't believe he could go into questioning about his legal theory.
Even if he had written it right there?
Even if he had written it right there. As the Supreme Court said, it's an area that no attorney is allowed to go into. U.S. Supreme Court. Heretofore inviolate, an area that you can't go into an attorney's legal theories, opinions. Because undoubtedly it's not going to stop there. What you're going to do is you are going to open the DA's offices to coming in and getting that opinion. No one's going to stop at that question.
Even if there's no dispute, assume, about the importance of the information to the proceeding and there's no dispute that the information can be obtained no other place, you still believe, you still have the same opinion.
Right. Regarding waiver, because something's a hardship to get, that never applies to core work product. And in a case like this, when they say, well, it's hard to get the information somewhere else, they didn't try to look anywhere else. If you want to prove the false information, they didn't, the police report, they didn't present the police report and say, that's where we get it. They hadn't said, the note about the investigator, that's a sheriff's deputy. They didn't say, well, we're going to call the sheriff's deputy. What they want to do is condense it all down and say, here's an easy way to get this whole file in and every note in it. We're just going to call the prosecutors. It's their file. Much of what's in there comes from someone else.
Mr. Brown, you make a compelling policy argument. How would these cases go forward without any assistance from the DA's office?
I think they would go forward with all the evidence you have about the false information. You'd take Travis Blank's affidavit and you'd say, Travis Blank, get on the stand. And you'd say, is this true? And he'd say, yes, yes, yes. And then you'd present another side. And everything Travis Blank's affidavit said was a lie. And so then you'd say, well, does that show malice? Well, that probably does show malice because that's when you have to show malice. This malice argument that you need the DAs up there to testify about malice, malice is clearly in the commencement. There's absolutely no reason to call a district attorney to the stand and talk about malice.
Is there any, your position is understand that DA shouldn't be called on any instance, even in a waiver situation. Would you concede that he could be called to testify, to answer short questions like the ones that were suggested here by Justice Wainwright? Is this your statement? Yes.
No, I don't believe you should be able to call district attorneys in malicious prosecution cases.
What if you had someone who said, I told the district attorney X, and it's not in this file? How are you going to impeach that person?
You're not going to. You're either going to have the jury believe that person or not, but you're not going to do it by calling district attorneys out of their courts and all.
Let's say their client on the other side just says, I told the DA that. You can't call the DA to say, they didn't tell me that. It's not in my file. They didn't tell me that. I mean, that. You can't call the DA for that purpose, so the defendant in the malicious prosecution file is there without any witnesses when the DA, all they have to do is say that they didn't do that.
I think any I'm sorry. I think any plaintiff could make up an easy reason why, oh, we just need the DA for this one question. And then
but this case would be the defendant.
Or the defendant. Either party
defendant says, I disclosed it to him. I disclosed it. But they didn't write it down. You're going to get swearing matches, and you're saying that you've got the evidence, but the DA is not limited to not testifying about court work product, but anything. So.
Correct. I think you don't open up the DA's office to becoming witnesses in every malicious prosecution case. Because undoubtedly, every defendant or plaintiff could come up for some reason and say, I just need the DA for this one question. I swear it's only going to take a few minutes. Call the court. Can you shut down your court and send the DA over? We need him just to answer this one question.
Well, we do that with doctors, though. We don't pull them out of the surgical suite. They give depositions.
Correct.
Don't we do that?
Right. Now, I don't think we want to open the DA's office to putting the district attorneys under oath and letting people go in and ask them how the process of the criminal district attorney's office is. Because I don't think you're going to have a limited question of, all right, I'm going to call them and I'm going to ask them one question and one question only. Because inevitably, the other side gets to cross them. And it always is going to lead to more and more questions.
Any further questions? Then that concludes the argument. The cause is submitted.